You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. Today we enter into a realm that tends to make people very nervous, very concerned, or deeply worried. The very mention of the term fairy, or the fae, can make some people very uncomfortable. But my guest today has created an intriguing and embracing space for experiences of this phenomena to share their stories freely. The marvellous Joe Hickey Hall from the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast joins me for an expansive, fascinating and challenging conversation as we discuss these experiences, some accounts and strange encounters that push the boundaries of what we think we know about the reality of the modern world. But before that, don't forget you can support Mysteries and Monsters by going to patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content and more. You can also click on the link in the show notes as usual. Mysteries and Monsters is on all social media platforms. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Mastodon, LinkedIn, and please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. You can also find us at mysteriesandmonsters.com for episodes, news, and merchandise. Thank you as always to Dean Bestel for his marvellous artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys, and Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange network. Now, let us challenge our perceptions in the company of Joe Hickey Hall. On today's episode, I'm delighted to welcome the marvellous Joe Hickey Hall for her first appearance on Mysteries and Monsters. Joe is the creative force behind the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, and the project collects and preserves contemporary experiences told firsthand. Since launching in the autumn of 2020, Joe has continued to speak with people who have had encounters that have challenged the fabric of their understanding. Joe, I'm delighted to welcome you to the show. How are we?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. That was a really lovely introduction.
Yes, I like to ease you in gently before I start.
Yeah. But yeah, really good and happy to be here.
Oh, pleasure. Joe, as I said before we started properly, I became aware of your work towards the end of the pandemic in regards to this marvellous collection of encounters that you are bringing to us through your wonderful show. I think for a lot of people, and as I've said to you earlier, before I started my show, I was not aware how prevalent the modern experience in regards to the fae or the fairy folk is around the world. It's not just something that is tied to the United Kingdom. So for you, this is something that has been a real passion project over the last few years as you come forward. So even with your love of folklore, were you surprised to discover just how rich these modern encounters seem to be?
Yeah, I think it really has actually taken me by surprise because I think when I started out, I just felt very inspired to start this project, you know, in its current form, because while I host the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, it began as the Modern Fairy Sightings project. And it was began as a Facebook group online. And it had come about from myself and Mark Norman writing the Devon chapter for a book called Magical Folk by Simon Young, which kind of looked at the folklore in all the different counties, or a lot of the counties in the UK and some in Ireland as well, up to the present day, including modern accounts. And having got back from that research trip, I thought it would be interesting to set up a Facebook group because it would be good to talk to people about their modern encounters, which I was interested in because I'd had my own encounter by then. Mm-hmm. I wasn't talking about that publicly at all. So the group initially, you know, it started small and you had the odd person chipping in, and then it kind of just really expanded greatly. And, you know, it got to a point where there were probably about 4,500 1,000 people in there, and you know, sharing really personal stories. And I have always tried to keep that number low, because it really always was about providing a safe space for people to talk about their encounters without fear of ridicule. But yeah, it really did surprise me. But I think it feels like it was the right time. It was the right time for the project. And when the podcast happened, it was just the right time for the podcast. It wasn't something that was planned as part of the project. It just kind of happened. And, you know, I've always said, I feel like this whole project has its own momentum, and I'm kind of in for the ride, really. I'm, you know, doing this because it means so much to me, but it's not coming from me, if you know what I mean. It's sort of like, I feel that this is a really important project to be doing, and I would not want to be doing anything else with my time. I just love it so much, but I do feel that it just has its own momentum and its own direction, and I'm kind of feeling into that and going with it wherever it wants to flow. So yes, it has really caught people's imaginations, as it were. And I think that there are, you know, maybe two types of listeners. There are the ones who have had experiences themselves, and up until the modern times we're in right now, which of course is a very strange time to be in, up until now, there hasn't really often been a space for them to talk freely about their experiences. And so the project was set up, you know, initially to break the taboo around talking about your fairy experiences, because there certainly was one, for a couple of different reasons that we should perhaps go into later. So you've got the people that really need to hear these stories, including me.
Mm-hmm.
you know, it means a lot to me to hear other people talk about their experiences, because it really helps to validate your own. And, you know, you don't feel so alone, and people are always ridiculed for seeing strange things. And okay, UFOs might be more acceptable nowadays, and there's lots of talk about it. You know, it's obviously been talked about in the news, and it's talked about by, you know, the security departments in the US, not so much Britain at the moment, but certainly the US. But to talk about fairies was still nonsensical to people. So there are people out there that really need to hear these stories. I get letters from them all the time, saying, thank you so much, you know, for doing this, because this happened to me. And then you've got listeners who are a bit curious and think, oh, what's all this about then? You know, fairies, come on. It's all a bit silly, isn't it? You know, surely they don't exist, but do they? And I think there's something about these times where all of the aspects of the world that as we look around us, everything we've ever known is sort of being called into question, as it were. It's almost like someone's thrown all the cards up in the air. You know, when you look about all the sorts of things we've encountered and witnessed and lived through in the last, you know, since 2016, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people think, well, the boundaries have ceased in some respect. And so this feels like a very liminal time. And I think that's why projects and podcasts like my own, and others looking at these experiences have been so popular.
I think it's quite a correct presumption that you referred to there in regards to the fact that I think one of the key aspects of this is the validation for other people, Joe.
Yeah.
That, as you say, some people will view this as, what on earth are they talking about? Why are these people having this kind of experience or claiming to have had something like this? But I think there are a couple of things at play here. Firstly, there's this complete misconception that a fairy looks a specific way. Mm. Whereas if anybody's listened to your show or read your blog, then like, clearly we're not Disneyfying anything here. There's none of that going on. These are very strange encounters of a variety of shapes and sizes and looks. There are people from all over the world. I know you've spoken to people from Canada and North America, as well as from the United Kingdom. And it seems that as my interest and knowledge of this subject grown over the last 3 years since I started doing my show, I have to say that I used to think I was very open-minded 4 years ago, Joe. Clearly I wasn't compared to where I am now. And so when I hear the people that you speak with, or I listen to other researchers and investigators from around the world, I realize just how little I knew about so many things that I presumed that I knew everything about. So when I listen to your show, not only is it one of the most relaxing experiences in my podcast library.
Oh, thank you.
But it is really interesting, as you say, to listen to these people who have had an experience that, in the prism of the modern world, shouldn't happen. These creatures don't exist. And clearly, there's a rational explanation for it. So when they hear other people, and as you refer to your own personal experience, it clearly proves that you're not going mad. You're not seeing things. These things are happening. And it is happening to other people. You are not alone.
Absolutely. I really do. I really do feel that. And I think I'm coming to realize more and more and coming to the conclusion that everybody listening will know somebody that's had one of these experiences. I would go as far as to say that, because they are so prevalent and people do not like to talk about it. Even if you're talking to somebody that's a complete skeptic, if you get them on their own and in the right circumstances, they might say, well, there was this one time, you know, and they will have something to tell you about some kind of extraordinary experience. I think, you know, we've always had these experiences and we always will. I do find it curious that we're encouraged to let go of the ideas of, the ideas of fantasy and, you know, what we call fantasy and otherworldly beings or fairies or anything like that. When we get to a certain age, it's definitely socialized out of us. But I think that a lot of people do have these experiences and then they're left with that experience and they don't really know what to do with it at all. So they just sort of suppress it, or they put it to one side, or, you know, forget about it, or they just assume that they must have imagined it. And sometimes when they're listening to somebody talk about their experience on the podcast, they remember about something that they'd forgotten, or whatever had happened to them tends to kind of begin to make more sense to them by hearing somebody else talk about it. Or, you know, they let go of some kind of tension that they were holding around that experience as well. So it can be a really kind of holistic experience to go through, simply to talk about it. You know, as I say, sort of does release a lot for us, because, you know, life is complex. And as you were saying before, you know, you thought you knew all the answers and, you know, you thought you knew what was what. And then the goalposts changed slightly because you heard about this and it kind of started to make sense to you. And then you have this new perception of the world. And I think that's really healthy. And I think we need to keep continuing to do that, because to say, this is what that's like, this is what that's like, this is what the world's like, these experiences are possible, these experiences are impossible. I think we are always changing our understanding, and we always have. When we look back at all the breakthroughs we've had in the history of the world and our understanding about everything from astronomy to science to health, all these breakthroughs have been looked upon at the time and, you know, scoffed at or regarded as mad. It's only ever because it's just the next boundary that we of, you know, evolution and understanding that we're heading towards. But I can, you know, equally, I can understand why people would look at or hear these encounters and think that it's this nonsense. You know, I myself, when I first started thinking about this, I thought it was ridiculous as well. You know, although I had at the time in my kind of late teens, early 20s, been really into meditation, and I read that book at the time. I don't know if your listeners would have heard of it too, The Celestine Prophecy. That would probably take people back. That was kind of the mid to late 90s, probably about 96 or something like that. And like a lot of people around that time, had a bit of a spiritual awakening. I'd always been interested in magic bits and pieces and journaling my dreams and interested in crystals and all of that sort of thing. Always had an interest. And the divine, I must say, having been to, so I went to a convent school when I was little, you know, not a boarding one, but just a kind of daytime hair convent school.
Sure.
And so I always had an interest in the divine. And I had then in my sort of late teens, early 20s, joined this group which taught you how to basic healing technique. It was around the time that Reiki was coming into people's lives, and other things like seeing auras and the use of color, all sorts of things. And I went to these workshops over the course of about, you know, 2 or 3 years. And one time the teacher, who was fabulous, she used to come over to Jersey where I lived to teach us. And she'd had a really interesting life because she had been at sort of the forefront of, eating vegetarian food and spirituality coming out of the 60s.
Yeah.
So she was sort of one of the elders, if you like, of this kind of learning. And just in a break time one day, she said to all of us while we were there, just in passing, that she'd once seen a fairy or fairies. And at the time, I just thought, well, that's impossible. Why is she saying that? You know, even though I'd been happy to learn about all these other ways of viewing the world and auras and meditation and past life regression, all that kind of thing.
Sure.
But when she talked about fairies, that for me was where my boundary was. I just thought, nope, not having that. That can't be real. Why is she saying that? So I did think at the time that the notion was entirely ridiculous. So I can understand other people when they might look at this and they just can't get their head around it. I get that. I do. But it's not until you have your own experience and then you know, and there's no turning back then, because you know,
yeah,
it can't really be undone. So yeah, I do get that.
Do you think as well, because even though I find what you're saying there quite interesting, because I have a very similar kind of mindset that when we talk about some of the subjects that I've covered on this show, when I talk about cryptids or ufology or the supernatural, I'm always really interested that in certain fields of interest, Joe, there seems to be a line that people won't go past. And if, say, they have a UFO story where someone, I covered one recently, one of my favourite ones, which is known as the pancakes from outer space, where a gentleman had an encounter and they made him some pancakes. And it's very interesting that when you look at these subjects, if we're talking, say, for example, about ufology, people are talking about the potential of being visited by alien craft from some far-flung reaches of the universe. And we have people reporting encounters with all shapes and sizes and colours and plans for humanity, depending on which version you bump into. And I find it curious sometimes that people will say, well, we'll accept this kind of thing, but we're not having that. That's too silly.
Yeah, yeah.
And that seems to happen in a lot of things, where there seems to be this unwritten rule that when you're talking about fantastical things or incredible encounters, I often find it quite challenging that there is these unwritten rules of what we can and can't talk about, or what allegedly believable, because there are all kinds of strange phenomena that people encounter all across the world, from people claiming to have encountered fairies or to have contact with deceased loved ones or bumping into the spirits of dead soldiers in battlefields, to people seeing upright creatures that aren't supposed to exist, to even dog men running around certain parts of the United States. And you think, well, if you believe certain portions of it, then that alone says you're only open-minded to a certain level, does it not?
Yeah, true. I think it is. I think, you know, it's natural for us to want to feel comfortable at home, right? Okay, so, you know, we're in our physical homes, we have four walls, we close the door, and we feel secure. We know what's going on, we know where everything is, and that makes us feel safe, and you know, we feel comfortable. If you think about the world as kind of an extension of that, and then it's like, oh, well, my understanding of the world was this. If that's suddenly blown away, then you start to question, well, hang on, what else that I'm taught about the world or believe about the world? What else is different or untrue or deeper than I possibly have imagined? Because if you say to somebody that has no willingness to believe that fairies may exist, that they do exist, then it's too much for them, I think. And to be honest, I think I would also say that, you know, my project, it's never been about trying to convince people that fairies exist. Mm-hmm. You know, that I think whatever people want to believe in is their business, honestly. And I think that if people don't want to believe in UFOs and if they don't want to believe in fairies, then that's their business. That's okay. I think that people that do and people that have experience shouldn't be stopped from talking about it because that's their experience. We all have a different kind of experience of this world. And, you know, the way I sometimes suggest is that even in the same family, you might have several brothers and sisters that have grown up in that family, and each of them will give you a different perception of what it was like being in that family, because we all have our own, as it were, sort of bubbles of perception, you know, and that is according to our faiths, our upbringing, our own experiences, our knowledge that we've gathered throughout that time, our education. You know, there's so much that goes into allow us to make sense of what we see around us. And one person will tell you that the world is red, you know, whatever that means, you know, it's like this. And the other person will tell you, no, the world is green, it's like this. And each of them are right in their own way, from their own perspective. That's what it's like for them. And that's what they're experiencing. Now, you can, if you are open-minded, you can jump into that other person's place and say, okay, well, I can see that given this, this, and this, I could imagine why you think the world is red or why you think the world is green. And let's be tolerant and leave it at that, because we're not always going to agree with each other or agree that the world is a certain way. But I think that for people that have had these experiences and like the guests that you have in your show and the sorts of research that you're looking into, I think that there are a great many of us now that do know that there is something more, and we are just eager to learn more, really. And it's not so that, for me anyway, it's not so that you can turn around and say, well, look, I told you, you know, they're real. Here's the proof. Because as human beings, it's what we seem to love to do. We just want to sort of wave that in the air and go, look, you know, I told you I was right. You know, this is the proof. For me, it's not about that. For me, it's finding meaning in all of this. And I think what is very important about the project and the podcast is that when people are talking about these encounters and I've chat them through it, there's always a point where they either remember something or that there's an aspect about it that hits them on a deep level. And sometimes it's because I'm helping them to look at it from a different perspective, perhaps through a question or suggestion. And it often, the encounter has a real deep meaning to the experiencer. Mm. That's really, really important. This is their experience, and it's something to do with their own consciousness. Now, others of us can share in that because we may have had something similar happen, and we can appreciate that, and we can empathize or imagine what that might be like. But ultimately, I think for the experiencer, this can be a real method of deep transformation. And I think that the fact that we are all, well, I'm saying all, in my world, they're all, because this is all I look at from day to day. I understand that the whole world is not looking at this this theme of study at the moment, but it feels like there are so many of us looking at this now. It's encouraging that maybe our kind of global consciousness is shifting, and that is why there is so much thirst for these explorations, because there's a sense that there is something more, and we're all kind of hungering for that.
Yeah, very much so. I think it's also, for me, it's something that in the modern era we've kind of lost sight of. We've kind of poo-pooed our old folklore, especially in the UK, Joe. Mm. We seem to be very dismissive of the stories that have been around for centuries, regardless of where you live. I mean, we only have to look in the variations of some of the stories and the legends from different parts of the UK. You look at the knockers of Cornwall and the boggarts of the Peak District, to the strange creatures that people will encounter in Cumbria and Scotland and Wales, that there was clearly a rich history of experiences that changed even from county to county, regardless. And often when people look at folklore, they think it's all the same thing. It's a one size fits all. And yet I used to be very churlish as a younger person about folklore. I used to think a lot of it was a bit silly. But I think as I've grown as a person, both in age and in knowledge, I've realized the importance of folklore, and possibly because I've looked to other countries and realized that I seem to have had an appreciation for their folklore far more than anything that was coming from the United Kingdom. I realized that it was myself and my perceptions that were wrong, not the folklore that was around me. And therefore now I've suddenly realized just how much is on my doorstep that I never really looked at properly.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And you know, I'm with you. When I was a kid and my dad used to tell me these stories and tell me about, my dad was amazing. He knew the name of every tree and, you know, the name of every bird. When he heard the bird song, he knew all of that. And at the time, you know, when you're younger, you don't realize how important these things are to know the trees around where you live, to know the birds that are there and to know the folklore, because this is about the place where you were born, the place where you're living, where you grew up. And it says so much about your culture, the people that live there, the history, ideas, you know, and they grow out of certain locations. So you can start looking to the locations and why certain legends might be related to that. And it's just absolutely fascinating. But I think maybe it's when you get older and you do start to appreciate these things. But I do think it's very important, particularly to look at your local folklore and just see what's there. And I think actually a lot of people started to do that in lockdown as well. Perhaps not necessarily the folklore, but looking where they lived and finding these little pockets that they never knew about before. And it could have just been, you know, a local park that they hadn't explored fully because they only ever went there for passing through or half an hour to walk the dog or whatever. And in lockdown, we really couldn't go much further than that. And so it's like these sort of worlds within worlds that we just didn't notice because of our busy lives and because of, we're always looking further afield, aren't we? Literally, you know, going to the next city to explore or away to another country to explore. But when you start to get to know the place where you live, it becomes deeply meaningful in a way that perhaps it didn't before.
Yes, I think that's very true. I think often, and I've heard this from many a researcher over the years, Gels, that they always advise if anybody wants to start, you just step out from your own doorstep. And I think, as you refer to there, too often we're looking at, say, for example, Loch Ness, when you could just wander around your local area and find some strange tale or some weird bit of folklore that's been enmeshed in the culture of your area for generations. And, you know, like I say, I used to be very guilty of this, and now I love to travel around my local area, go out to the peaks and find out more about the things. We've got so many strange and wonderful places around there, like the Mermaid's Pool, where you've got a wonderful story about a mermaid that lives in a particular pool and she appears at a certain time of year and will ask a person a question. And if you give the wrong answer, she will drag you to your death. So, and that's been there for the best part of 200 to 300 years. And you've got, you know, we've got stone circles dotted about all over there. And then you've got stranger, more modern things with the amount of strange plane crashes in certain areas of the Peak District and strange lights. And then you've got all that. And then you've got, on top of all that, you've got a rich history of ghosts and hauntings everywhere. So,
yeah.
Whereas 30 years ago, Joe, I'd be looking at, oh, well, what's the more famous haunted houses somewhere else, rather than where I live now, 15 minutes away, is a house that's been there since, I think, 1565. And it's still there in my local park. It's called the Bishop's House. It's haunted, which until 4 or 5 years ago, I never even thought about it, never even really knew what it was or its history or anything. Now, I walk past it most days and I always just stop just to look at it. It's the same building every day, but it's there now. And so I appreciate it far more than I could ever have possibly done when I was looking at it through a more sort of flippant view of it all, really.
Yeah, you have to get, can you get in there? And
oh yes, it's open on a weekend. You can go out, they warn you. They did a, they do a Halloween play every year about the ghost, because there's a ghost in the park as well.
Yeah.
It's a, it's a double prize, our local park.
Wow, yeah, sounds like there's loads going on up there.
Absolutely, you've got to be careful. She has a tendency to chase dog walkers, apparently. I wasn't aware of it. There's some strange sightings just around the corner from where I live. There was a disembodied head seen by somebody about 30 years ago floating through their front room at one point. So, yes, there's a lot happening around here.
Gosh, yeah, I'm very interested in ghosts as well, so... there's a bunch of people who we've decided that we might go on a bit of an expedition with. So, I'm always really interested.
So, obviously, as someone that's been brought up with a wide appreciation of myths and legends, and as we touched on earlier, your Irish heritage, and you've always clearly had a love of folklore. Did you... I mean, the thing with folklore is it can take you in so many different ways, and there are so many facets and little nuances to certain aspects of it all. Why do you think it was the modern interpretations or the modern encounters with fairies that sort of drew you in, Joe? Was it you heard one story that kind of made a spark go off and you thought, surely people can't be having these experiences in the modern era? Or was it, were you sort of challenging yourself to sort of believe, as you refer to this teacher that you met in Jersey, to find out if it was just a tall tale? Or was it the fact that you were thinking about these things when something happened to you?
That's a really good question. I kind of did it the opposite way around, because although I had, through joining these workshops and functioning as a healer as well, I used to do Reiki to start off with. I had a really amazing experience, in fact, that this is actually quite pivotal, I would say. I'm not sure I've spoken about this before even publicly, but around that time of, the whole Celestine prophecy and it was pre the workshops as well, in fact, I was learning Reiki with a friend of mine who was teaching it at the time. So this must have been 96. And she invited me round to her home along with another few people. And we would do various exercises in training for Reiki. And this one particular evening, she said, right, come round and bring a crystal with you.
Mm.
Now, as I say, I'd been into journaling my dreams and since I was, young teenager. And I'd got into crystals a bit as well. I had a pouch with various crystals in, and I had this one crystal that was an amethyst. And so I just grabbed this amethyst and headed off to her home. Didn't really think anything of it.
Mm.
We sat down to do this meditation, and we were all in her lounge, really lovely, comfy family home. And I thought, this is quite interesting, doing this meditation, learning all about meditation. I hadn't really done much meditation at the time, in fact. I think that was probably through her, that was probably my introduction to meditation.
Mm. Mm.
And you had to put the crystal in your left hand, if you were right-handed, put the crystal in your left hand, cover it over the top with your right hand, and then you breathed in that sense of that crystal. So you breathe it up through your arms into your heart. And then when you breathe out, it's like you're breathing something of yourself from your heart back into the crystal.
Mm.
So you're breathing the experience of the crystal into your heart, the resonation, the vibration of it, and then something of yourself back into the crystal. So you just went on like that with your breathing. And all of a sudden, the only way I can describe it is that it felt like I disappeared.
Mm.
But at the same time, I became everything. So what I could see was I was in this place. It was light and it was never ending. It was just infinite. And I had disappeared, but at the same time, I was everything. It sounds really bizarre, but that is what happened.
Mm.
And I panicked because, I didn't know what was going on. And the panic obviously brought me out of it, and I started having a bit of panic attack. And she said to me, oh my goodness, are you okay? I'm so, you're all right. And she was so flummoxed that she called her partner in from the kitchen. And he was actually further on ahead in his studies in this area than she was.
Mm.
And he said, what were you meditating with? And I said, it was an amethyst. And of course, what I didn't realize at the time was that amethyst is it's connected with your violet chakra, that the top of your head, the crown chakra. Now this relates to the all. Okay. So the all is, your relationship with, whatever you call the source, you know, God, infinity, the all, I think.
Mm.
And I didn't know this, but that is what I had experienced. And so it was very, very powerful. I wasn't expecting it. So I think that was probably quite pivotal for me, because I then realized that you can experience these out-of-body experiences and have experiences that you don't really have any kind of anything to hang them on. If you're living in the daily world, people don't talk about things like this, leaving your body. Then you might hear about it, near-death experiences and things like that, but yes, it's not something that people do. Or you might hear about it that really experienced yogis are able to have experiences like that, but not just your average person.
Uh-huh.
So I'd had that experience. Then I was doing workshop and learning all about meditation, auras, seeing auras, cleansing auras, and all of that kind of thing. And then in my mid-20s, I decided that I wanted to test all of this because I felt like I had a pretty good handle on all of that side of things. But I felt like I wanted to test these theories and experiences with something more kind of academic and another view of the world. And growing up in Jersey, you're a bit sort of cushioned from the world, to be honest, because it's such a, I mean, this beautiful island, and you read about the news going on in the rest of the world, but somehow it never sort of feels like it's, you know, relates much to what's happening in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I undertook a degree in social science and just learning more about how the world functions and how what we learn about the world. And so I kind of was then able to sort of see, okay, what is the world presented to us like from an academic perspective? And what is the world that we find or experience, you know, from a spiritual perspective?
Hmm.
And I think that was quite a good sort of balance. But I still at that stage, having heard the woman at the workshop talk about fairies, just that fairies were, that's nonsense. At some point in my, you know, mid-20s, then I also, or late-20s, I learned the body mirror system, which is a healing technique. It's a system, the chakra healing, and I was pretty good at it, in fact. And I guess things like this come quite naturally to me. But I completely changed after that experience. Just the body mirror system was, again, another massively pivotal experience. I had gone into that thinking, oh, I'm going to learn something new. I'm going to learn a new system of healing. And actually, it just entirely changed my life, because after the workshop, in which you give and receive 5 healings within, you know, the workshop, in those days it was about 5 days of learning, and they're still running now. I came away from that completely different. My whole perspective had shifted. The healing I had in those 4 or 5 days was very powerful, and it even had a physical effect, in that when I went to the workshop, I was short-sighted, very, blurry vision, so I could kind of get around. But when I went to the workshop, I was wearing contact lenses. And within that class, we were encouraged to, if you're wearing glasses, take them off. If you're wearing contact lenses, take them off, because I thought I'd come in to learn how to do healing. He was saying, you've come here, you're going to give and receive healings. And therefore, if you're having a healing, you would expect to be returned to full self, whatever that means to you. So, you know, vision is part of that. Remove your glasses.
Mm.
So I had taken my contact lenses off, and I had this healing from him just as part of the break, because he needed a guinea pig to show us all how to do the next stage of the workshop.
Yeah.
I opened my eyes and I could see clearly. Now, I could see out of the window. Is it the London College of Psychic Studies? This was 2005. I could look out the window and I could see the leaves on the trees. And when I left, you know, to go home that evening of the day, I could see people's faces on the other side of the street.
Sure.
So I'd had physical transformation, you know, as in I was experiencing the world in a completely different way. Yeah. It was very, very interesting and completely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Now, about a year later, and I must say, actually, when I came home after that workshop, literally everything in my life changed. And, you know, I look back on how my life was before, and it's almost like looking on a different life, in fact.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I just felt very limited before, as in all respects, basically. And after that experience, I just felt like I was more like me, the me that we all are when we're born and we're children, that we somehow kind of lose through various experiences through our lives and,
yeah,
you know, limitations that we place on ourselves, that society puts on us and all of that.
Mm.
And so after a year after that experience, I was a much, much happier person. Immediately things had shifted for me. And that is a year later is when the experience happened. I was with my now husband at the time. We'd met probably about 6 or 9 months before. So again, not long after the workshop, I had met him and a whole new group of friends. And we were in a beauty spot watching the sun go down and eating a picnic. And I turned around for a moment, something made me turn around, and I saw, not far away, this small green man. Now, when I say green, he was all dressed in green. He had a very friendly, open face. He was about 2.5, 3 foot tall. He was looking directly at me. His face looked completely ancient, as in his face was just completely wrinkled, like leather. It was had that kind of look to it, you know, very, very weathered. And as I say, he was looking right at me, and I got the sense he'd actually been looking at me before I saw him.
Mm.
And we held this each other's gaze for a few moments, you know, and I can, you know, be back there now, and I'm imagining it. And then I don't know whether I blinked or looked away, and then he was gone.
Mm.
But he was very much there. And this wasn't a sort of a visualization or anything like that. This was like a real person right there, you know, looking right back at me. And so that was 2006. So that would have been possibly in the middle of 2006. So yeah, that was something that if somebody had said to me, "You're going to see a fairy," I would never, ever have believed them.
Mm.
And I'm not sure if somebody else had said to me at that point that they had seen a fairy, I'm not sure whether I would believe them.
Yep.
But, you know, it happened. And when we got up to leave, because I didn't say anything to my husband because we'd been with each other that long.
Yes.
we were still in that sort of courting period because he actually lived in London and I lived in Jersey. So we would see each other kind of every so often when we could get to see each other.
Mm.
And didn't say anything to him because he's really not into anything like that anyway. we got up to leave. This was quite some time later now. It was dark by that point because when I saw this being, it was coming into twilight, which I think was a factor.
Yes.
I really believe that was a factor. And the other factor I feel was important was the fact that we were very much, you know, falling in love at that time. And I feel that that was potentially what drew that experience. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do feel that be something. So we got up to leave and it was very, very dark because there were no lights around there. We were near a dolmen, I should add as well. And we went to walk back to the car, and as we were walking, there was something in the tall grass to the left of us. And as my husband, now husband, took his paces, something was walking at the same pace, and my husband got really spooked and he started walking faster, and it started walking faster. And then he started running, and it started running, and we just ran back to the car. And I was laughing because I knew what it was. And I did tell him months later, I did tell him, and you know, he just thought that was interesting. But I thought that was really funny that the experience didn't stop there, that clearly whatever being it was having a bit of a laugh at our expense, kind of thing. And and knowing what I know now, that is a very sort of cheeky thing to do, and very fairy.
Yeah. I suppose as well, as we've mentioned, when I speak to people who have had experiences on a variety of themes, Joe, I think the biggest thing for a lot of people is that the fact that they don't have anyone to turn to talk about this. So
yeah,
when this had happened to you, was it a situation that even though you knew people who were very open-minded, that were very connected into different aspects of the world around us and perhaps view things in a very different way to the average person in the street, did you, even though you had that sort of base and knowledge around you in regards to the people you associated with and the things that you were indulging in, did you still feel unable to express yourself or be honest about what had happened to you and kept it to yourself?
Definitely. And I mean, I did actually tell a friend of mine, because I didn't really have many people to tell. I didn't have any friends to tell. You know, even though I had really lovely friends and they were, you know, very, I would say, very open-minded. But when it came to fairies, they would, I mean, it would have just been pointless telling them, really, because I don't even think they would have known what to do with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think they probably would have questioned my sanity, and I knew that. If I'd said that, and it's, honestly, this is the reality for people.
Yeah.
I totally get it. So I did tell a friend of mine, and she was a friend that I'd done Tai Chi with, and we'd weaved in and out of each other's lives for lots of different reasons over the years. And I just thought she would get it. So I told her, and she said, oh, well, I think that's so lovely that you think you saw what you saw, but I'm afraid I just don't believe it. So I said, okay, fine, fair enough. And, you know, it didn't then. That friendship or anything like that, it was fine. I got it. You know, I did exactly the same to the woman when she, not outwardly, but when she had said, this woman in the workshop, that she had seen a fairy. You know, inwardly I was thinking, God, what's she saying that for? You know, I didn't believe her, and I thought she was talking nonsense. So I'd be a fine one to stand there and get upset because someone doesn't believe me. I get it. So I did, however, know somebody who was a wise man at the time, somebody that I would bump into because I took my daughter horse riding, and he had an antique shop next to where I used to take her horse riding. And so we kind of had been sussing each other out a bit because I knew he knew some stuff and he knew I knew some stuff. So we were kind of like sussing each other out. And and one day, because I knew he did tarot readings for people as well, when we got to know each other and trust each other a little bit, just from sort of the odd question here and there, and you know, I said to him, look, I've seen something. And he said, oh yeah, you know, where have you seen that then? What did you see? And I told him, and he listened, and he just laughed and said, ah, you're not the only one. And so someone else, or people, I don't know whether it's a, you know, personal love, but people had similar experiences according to him at that site. Now the other thing that was interesting was when I came to Bristol in 2014 to do a master's, and I, not long after I moved here, the friend that I'd confided in, and that she said she didn't believe what I'd seen, she contacted me and she said, oh, I've got something really exciting. I'm going to tell you something. She's all excited. She said, this woman that she knows, her friend, had told her that she had seen something at the same place. So now, I mean, it was exactly the same place. She believed this woman. So, you know, she phoned me up to tell me. So I said, all right, so you believe this, you know, I was joking with her. So you're happy to believe her, but you wouldn't believe me. We had a bit of a laugh about it. But she, she you know, she said, yes, you know, I do believe you now that you saw what you saw. Well, that was 2014, and I've been meaning to talk to this woman for, well, since then. And we kind of have, when I started the podcast, I sent her a message and said, look, it'd be really, really great to chat to you, you know, not even necessarily for the podcast, but just off the record, because I really want to talk to you about, you know, how, just to find out how similar our experiences were. Now, just for one reason and another, we've never really got to do that until this summer.
Mm.
And I went to meet her with this shared friend, this mutual friend of ours. We all came together and we met. So I met this woman, and it was incredible, because what she saw sounded just exactly the being that I saw. Now, I knew she'd seen something, but I didn't know that she had seen, and even my friend, the mutual friend, didn't know that she'd seen exactly what I had seen. And we talked about, you know, where she saw the being, and it was just, I mean, just a few meters between, say, three to 5 meters away from where I saw the being. So this is really interesting to me. And I did record that chat with her, and I will be releasing that on the podcast at some point. I haven't decided when yet.
Mm.
But, you know, that was quite amazing for me, really, to talk to her about that, because we've talked about the idea on the podcast. And, you know, I'm not changing my mind, but evolving, as we all should, evolving all the time about what this can mean, how it all works, why we're having these experiences, who has these experiences, what factors make it more likely for these experiences to happen. You know, and the more we talk to each other, this is a big part of the project, the more we talk to each other, the more we are able to kind of push back those boundaries even more, because, you know, we still have them, even though I'm talking about things that some people just think are just, you know, off the scale.
Yes.
I still have a boundary. I still hear certain things like you and think, oh God, that hit a bit of a boundary there. I'm not actually sure whether I'm going with that or not.
Sure.
But the more we talk about it and the more we listen to each other, those boundaries are expanding all the time. And, you know, I had talked about the idea that perhaps what I saw was a product of my own biases of what I would imagine a fairy would be like, for instance.
Yeah.
I was always thinking perhaps that's what it's like. Not necessarily that is exactly what it was, but this was an idea that I explored. But having spoken to this woman who saw, you know, what sounds like the same being at the same place, now it's more of an idea of, right, so maybe there literally are beings that look after and tend specific areas. And I know that we talk about this a lot with nature spirits tending trees and plants and flowers, and maybe they do tend areas.
Mm.
They may not be the only one, but maybe they do stay to an area.
Mm.
So this is very interesting to me, and it just provides another line of research.
I think also when you're dealing with these kind of experiences, it's harder to not try and fall into a trend or to try and prescribe reasons for it, Joe. Whereas I think if you just let the experience flow and let people tell you what happened to them and where it happened, rather than say, oh, well, that's probably why it happened there, or it's because of this. Because as you referred to, you were in a heightened emotional state at the time. You were going through the, as you mentioned, the first flushes of love. So some would say that perhaps you were more spiritually and emotionally open to the world around you, and therefore it made it easier for whatever this was to make them appear or to appear to you, because you were in that particular frame of mind. Whereas other people may say, well, sometimes it you've got to be in the right place at the right time on a certain day at a certain time for it to occur.
Mm.
So I think when you look at what happens, it's harder to not try and frame it in some kind of explanation than it is to just say, well, this is what's happened.
Yeah, it is. We want to jump in, don't we? And we want to analyze it, you know, and that's where our sort of, you know, the mind comes in. And I think you're right. Just listening and being open. And that kind of means opening your heart as well, perhaps listening, you know, from the heart and just listening to someone's experiences. What did it feel like for them? How did it make them feel afterwards? What's it kind of left them with in some ways? Do they feel different afterwards? How does it, it's more about how does it feel rather than what do you think? And I think that that's a different way of listening. And I think, I hope that that is where we're headed as a global consciousness as well, that we actually, maybe we don't put the kind of thinking and analyzing everything to the nth degree on a pedestal, and rather that we maybe start to feel more what is right than have to wave proof around. How about listening to what feels right and listening to what feels right for other people, because we are all different. But yeah, certainly listening to people's experiences brings a different level of understanding, and it kind of allows you to access more, because if you're always analyzing everything, it sometimes feels like you're just defending what your own boundaries and limitations are, your own, you know, analytical boundaries. Where if you're listening with an open heart and just accepting that this person had this experience that you cannot understand, but nevertheless, you can empathize. Imagine if you were that person having that experience, what would that feel like? You know, if we can listen from that kind of level, we can actually get on a lot better. And it just generally as a global society, just even as a local community even. So I think, I hope we're sort of moving into more of that. And as I'm sure other people have suggested to you before, what we're in right now, and we're kind of between the worlds, if you like, because we've got the sort of pre-2016 or, you know, and before that. And then we've got what we're going through right now, where this period that feels like a very much like some sort of transition into something new. And I like to think that we are headed somewhere that is much more heart-focused than we have seen in the last sort of 300 years, for instance.
Yes, I certainly agree. I really do hope we're in our chrysalis period, Joe. We're about to burst out like a beautiful, beautiful butterfly into something more knowledgeable and more balanced and more patient, I think.
Yeah.
I often mentioned that, I grew up in a haunted house, Joe. So I've always been very open-minded when it comes to paranormal. There is one experience in my early life as a young child that I can never explain. And one of the reasons I was looking forward to speaking to you was to briefly mention this to you without.
Oh, yeah.
So when I was a young boy, I often used to stay at my grandparents quite a lot. And I used to have a big double bed all to myself. It was fab. When you're five and you've got a double bed, it's amazing. So one particular evening, I awoke in the middle of the night for no reason. And I noticed that my wall was glowing in the bedroom. And I sat up, and it was like somebody'd got a film projector going. And all of a sudden, this frame appeared around this portion of the wall. And for the next, until dawn, I don't know how long it was, I was basically watching what I presumed to be a group of gnomes, as if I was in a little treehouse above where their village was, watching them all go about their day-to-day duties, Joe, for hours. And they were walking about, and they were doing their gardening, and they were dealing with their animals. They got little pens, and they were eating food, and they were all wandering around and moving wheelbarrows about. And I know it wasn't a dream, because I kept turning round, because I thought it, because it was a rainy night, I kept thinking that all I was seeing was light shining through the window on the rain running down the pane. But it wasn't. And I watched this until the sun came up. And as the sun came up, the image began to fade away slowly. And then it just disappeared. I have tried to get my head around what that was for about 40 years.
Oh, that's absolutely beautiful. Gosh, that is such a lovely experience. Yeah, I mean, when you started talking there and saying, you know, that the projection against the wall, somebody very close to me had a very, very similar experience to that. So I must play her your encounter, because I know it will mean a lot to her.
Mm.
That is really wonderful. So And how did that feel for you?
I remember the overriding emotion was that I was very sad that it finished. And I was also very sad that it never happened again.
Yeah.
But they never sort of seemed to realise I was watching them. I was just sat there transfixed. It was amazing. There was nothing spectacular going on. You know, I wasn't watching people fighting or monsters or anything. It was just what I presume to be a collection of gnomes or dwarves or whatever you want to call them, little people with beards, just doing things, just doing their normal daily life.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think children in particular, they're just open to this. We're all very much open to it as children. And I guess it depends how we talk to our parents about it and how our parents talk to us about it. We're for all the right reason, we as parents want to soothe our children and say, don't worry, it's just a dream. Don't worry, it's just your imagination. And, you know, if we're told this often enough, we then tend to sort of separate it and say, that's not real. That's imagination. That's where imagination belongs. And then, you know, as you get older, you know, maybe when you're a kid, you're encouraged to use your imagination. And, you know, but then when you get to school and, you know, now's not the time for that. Now we're doing this, this and this, and everything becomes very structured. And, you know, there's a time and a place for imaginative play, imaginative exploration, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I think that we portion it away. We say, okay, this is reality. You know, I get up, have for breakfast, I go to school, come back, you know, I do my work and, you know, play with my friends, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that what I saw and experienced was my imagination. But I think it's lovely that you held on to that. And I just wonder, you know, one thing we can do sometimes that's useful is just to meditate on it in any way that you can.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not used to meditation, I used an app called Insight Timer, which is free and you can get it anywhere. I think you can even get it online. I just have it on my phone. And that leads you through some meditations of all sorts. There's everything I think you can imagine on there just to lead you in meditations, visualizations and stuff.
Mm.
But if you can get into some kind of meditative state with the intention of exploring that encounter back then, tapping into it some way.
Mm.
And if you can say, right, I'm just going to open to what that was. And I'd just love some answers. And when you come out of your meditation, you could just immediately write down anything that comes up during that meditation. Maybe you can even intend, I would really love to dream about this, if there's anything more that I can learn from this or look into.
Yeah.
So you can, in your own way, in a very gentle way as well, you can start to maybe try and reconnect with it. I know it's tricky when it's so long ago, but you can at least remain open to it. And I think that even just that helps if there's an intention to remain open to finding some more meaning about it or remembering more about it. Did you tell your parents or grandparents at the time?
Well, my grandmother considered herself to be a white witch.
Right.
And she just said, oh, well, that's very nice. Did you enjoy it? And I said, yes. She said, well, that's good then. And that was it.
Oh, that's lovely. Exactly. So granny's finding out there now, are these fairies bothering you? Because sometimes they do, and we do have to do something about it then. If it's bothering our kids,
yeah,
we do. We do have to step in and, you know, make sure that they're protected, because not all of these experiences are pleasant.
Mm.
So that sounds to me like granny there was just, you know, being her wise self and just checking it out. How was it for you? Good.
Yeah.
Brilliant. You know, and letting you get on with that. And so you never experienced anything more after that then?
Nothing of that ilk. Obviously, like I say, I mean, our house was haunted, so all kinds of weird things used to go on there, Joe. We used to have footsteps up and down the stairs and carpets rolling up and things going on like that. So that was quite odd. And then my auntie had a pub with a poltergeist called Fred, who was a bit cheeky.
Great.
But other than that, there was a lot going on when we were kids. It was quite interesting. I mean, and when you're a kid, you just kind of roll with that kind of stuff. It's not, you know, there's nothing frightening. It was just quite exciting more than anything. So, but it's something I've held on to for a very long time, because I can't say, oh, well, it wasn't in the haunted house. My grandparents' house wasn't particularly new. It wasn't built in a specific area, so it wasn't anything sort of connected with the land. Wasn't really near, well, it wasn't near any water at all. So as I've got older, I've looked at possible scenarios and explanations for it. And that's probably why it stuck with me for so long, because it's so completely, because as a child, I was obsessed with Dracula and Frankenstein's monster and Nessie and Yetis and things. And yet I didn't see that. I saw something that I probably wasn't even considering. And that's what's always made it stick with me, I think, Jo.
Yeah. Yeah, that the thing. I mean, I agree. You know, for myself as well. When this woman said to me, "I've seen fairies," my mind immediately went to, you know, the woman in the workshop. My mind immediately went to the Cicely Mary Barker flower fairies.
Yes,
when she said that, I can remember looking out of the window where we were, because she wasn't talking about the garden where we were. She was a guest at that place, but I just remember at that moment looking out into the garden where we were. And imagining that I imagined she was talking about, which was seeing flowers, fairies on flowers.
Mm.
So when I saw what I saw, I wasn't expecting to see, I guess you could call him a gnome.
Mm.
It's interesting, isn't it? But that's so beautiful that you did. And I love it that your family was so open as well. You know, it's so much more helpful for our kids if, well, I suppose when they're born into our families and we're all open, it's just that they're having that experience because they're part of your family, I guess. Because for other children, if they have an experience, it could potentially be shut down for a number of reasons. But if sounds like you were a bit like our family, we were kind of open to stuff. I mean, not anyone else in my family saw fairies, although I do wonder about my dad. Unfortunately, he's no longer here to ask, although I do know that he had some very, very interesting experiences of his own, but not, as far as I know, related to fairy. But other members of my family have seen ghosts. My brother saw disembodied head?
Yes.
Like a floating head?
Yeah.
Yeah, he saw just out the back of our house once while he was doing the washing up. He stood at the sink doing the washing up and the head just rose and it was a woman's face, just disembodied, looking in the window at him, and he screamed and ran away. My sister has had loads of really quite scary experiences and you know, I think when you grow up with the idea that this is kind of, it's normal to that we're surrounded with the unexplained, I think it sort of allows you to accept these encounters and these events. It doesn't mean that you're not scared or whatever by them, but at least you don't walk around telling yourself you were kidding yourself, I suppose, which must be difficult for some people if they have like a really earth-shattering experience and then they're told from society or from their family or whatever, that it means that they are ill in some way. And let's not forget, you know, there are conditions where people have some difficulties and that some experiences that people have can be caused by diseases and conditions.
Yeah.
But not talking about that.
Absolutely.
But if you have an experience and you're left with the thought that you must be mad because you had that experience, then that's very difficult. I remember talking to one woman who, on the podcast, the episode was the Red Winged Warrior. And she had seen a fairy when she was very little. And she had this kind of condition where she could, picture her memory could go way, way back and she could see everything in fine detail. But anyway, so she was with another woman. She was about three and she was with a woman and they both saw this, would be more like a kind of Tinkerbell fairy, actually. And they're very few and far between in the encounters that get reported. But she had seen a small winged fairy and it came right up to her face and she had this experience with it very up close. And the woman was with her and the woman saw it too. And then when the encounter had happened and they walked away, the woman said, you know, they sort of stood and talked about that, what had just happened. And years later, they met again. And this woman still remembered what had happened. And so did the child who'd grown up to be a woman. At that point, they were having a discussion about it as adults. And the older woman, she had become she was a born-again Christian by this point, and she couldn't deny that it had happened because she knew it had, and she was still willing to talk about it. But in order for it to make sense to her, for it to be acceptable, because she couldn't deny it because they'd both experienced and seen it and both remembered it, she was now regarding it as a demon that had appeared. So that was how she was able to place it into a box like we do.
Mm.
So that was interesting. So, you know, we have all these ways of making sense to ourselves. So for somebody to have an experience and then feel that they were wrong in some way for having that experience, or that they are ill or whatever, and to walk around holding that, I feel really sad about those sorts of sorrows that people have. So I just, when I get messages from people saying thank you so much for doing this and talking about this, I feel like this project is doing its job.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I love listening to some of the people you speak with. One of my particularly favorite episodes that you've done, Joe, is, I think it's one of your older ones, The Good, the Bad and the Tickly.
Oh yes, that was a great one.
Now, I love that primarily because you've got a witness who had three very different encounters. Because this is the other thing, as we've sort of danced around a little bit, the majority of people you speak to do not see what the media would portray as the fairy. They see a variety of creatures of differing sizes and shapes and skin colours and tones and all sorts. And as you mentioned there, very few of them, if many at all, are to do with the little winged being fluttering around. Most of them are, you know, as you were saying, you saw a creature that was 2 or 3 feet tall, Joe, with an older face. Whereas some people kind of think that they've encountered the Green Man, or some people. It's interesting that because we have all these cultural references, people will always try and describe what it is, even though it probably isn't. Some people have said that they think they've encountered goblins or dwarves. And so we try and describe creatures that are outside the parameters of what is supposed to be reality, really, Joe, I think, in a way that makes it easier for people to understand. And I think sometimes people, you know, if you say somebody, oh, well, I've seen a dwarf, they'll automatically think, oh, well, he's wearing a hat and he's got a beard and he's probably got some tools or doing something like that. But I don't think that necessarily works like that. And obviously, some of our family have spent a long period of time in Norway and Scandinavia. So whenever I've had the pleasure of going there, I'm always delighted to see their openness in regards to the world of trolls.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't walk down the street of Oslo more than 500 yards without running into something mentioning trolls or a troll to have. I've had a picture taken with a troll out there, and there's trolls sleeping in shops and all sorts. It's beautiful, really.
Yeah.
And so I find that aspect, that it's so ingrained in their culture as just very matter of fact, very sad to see sometimes that we seem to have gone away from it in the UK a great deal, because obviously there are some areas, as I was mentioning earlier on, where we've got these wonderful histories of these creatures and varieties of such that seem to have been completely wiped off the map in these more modern scientific times, Joe. And I think it's a real shame that when you speak to people, one of the great things about it is that you just allow the people to explain their experience. You don't try and tell them what they've seen or why they've seen it. It's just a conduit for them to explain their experience in a safe space, knowing that they won't be ridiculed or told what they've seen.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and, you know, sometimes within that conversation, as I say, it does, I guess I'm looking at it from a healing perspective as well. That training that I have, it gives me a bit of an insight sometimes if they're talking about what it was that they saw. Sometimes it just, you know, I can provide another layer of potential meaning for them if it's helpful, you know, and sometimes that sort of resonates with them, and then sometimes it doesn't, and that's fine. But I think it is just important to listen to what people's experiences are. You know, I often find when I'm listening to, you know, watching documentaries, say, for instance, and you'll get somebody comes on and they talk about their experience, whether it was a UFO or they saw, you know, or an alien experience or whatever it was that they saw. And then you get somebody coming on, a skeptic afterwards, and they say, well, you know, they think that they saw this, but actually, you know, what they really saw was this. And it just infuriates me because I just think, well, can't we just listen to what the person is saying and what they said they saw? The skeptic will take an angle that's just ridiculous. It's like somebody's clearly seen something that they've described, and then the skeptic will come out with, you know, it's a bit like the weather balloon excuses when, you know, there are so many cases of that where people have described these incredible encounters in detail, and then, you know, what they saw and how it moved and all this stuff. Get somebody describe, you know, explaining it away as a weather balloon. And I guess, you know, it's a good way of shutting people up, of course, to do that.
Sure.
But yeah, I do feel that's an important aspect. And just going back to what you were saying about the way that we've lost a lot of our culture, you know, with regard to fairy tales. But thankfully, the folklore is very rich in some areas that remained very rural. And but of course, it very much changed for us with religious reformation.
Sure.
And when, you know, the sort of Protestant Orthodox viewpoints, they just completely demonized fairies. And of course, we saw some really horrendous event go off with witch hunts, etc. Through history as well. But if you look at somewhere like Ireland, where they didn't have that religious reformation in the same way, a lot of the folklore and the belief systems were then sort of weaved in to Catholicism.
Yes.
To make it more digestible to the people. Otherwise, they just wouldn't have had it. And so you get Wells that were sacred wells that are now, you know, sacred to perhaps saints instead. And they don't lose any of their potency either. You know, I'm interested in saints too. But, you know, there are these pockets where if they were kind of largely rural areas, they were hung on to because they were meaningful.
Mm.
But you can imagine at the time, you know, the authorities, which at the time was religion, telling people what they should think and what they shouldn't think.
Yeah,
and how oppressive that must have been, and so you know, but people have a good sense of what's what. Thankfully, I think.
Yeah, it does seem that, especially around the UK and Ireland, you've got pockets there. You've got obviously Islanders. I've always found that duality that they've got there with fairy lore and Catholicism quite very interesting. That they've seemed to have in other places, as you refer to there, and the King James and his seeing of witches wherever he went,
yeah,
basically just made people terrified to talk about anything that wasn't the norm in that era.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet you would still have places like Wales and Scotland and Cornwall, especially, even probably places like Norfolk, where because they were so far away from everywhere else in those days, they were able to just carry on regardless and just only pretend to be normal when the outsiders turned up, Joe. So they could kind of push it all away for a bit, and they've still continued to hold on to those wonderful traditions. And so when we look at how things are coming in the modern, it for me, I think it's fabulous that folklore seems to be coming back. I think a lot to do with the modern rise of paganism and Wicca seems to be also, for me, Joe, it seems to have become a bit of a gateway to allow some of these older traditions and the way people viewed the world around them and some of these older stories to come back into the modern era. Because as we were saying about culture and folklore, I think these are vitally important things that we've really lost sight of in the UK over the last 200-300 years. And it only seems like now we suddenly realise what we've had and what we might lose if we don't record them, be it stories of ghostly encounters, or people having strange places, or these wonderful burrows and standing stones that we come across and why they're there and how long have they been there. And so one of my biggest passions is wherever I go on holiday, I will always try and source out a local ghost story book or a local legends book, just so I can have a look at the tapestry and their history and see what I would normally have missed. 10 years ago, I wouldn't have done anything like that, Joe, but now it's the first thing I do, and I find wonderful collections from all over the place because for me, I think they're not just important in regards to talking about strange and spooky things. I think culturally, they're massively important because they tell us a lot about the world at that point and the world we're in right now.
Yeah, for sure. I absolutely agree. Yeah, I think it's great that people are taking an interest and, you know, like myself, we're looking for deeper meaning in our lives. And maybe, you know, as people have moved away from sort of organized religions, as it were, I think, you know, people are finding what's true for them. And a lot of that is bound up with nature too. And so they're going out and being closer to nature and appreciating nature more, along with, you know, ideas of protecting nature. And in doing so, they're actually feeling that there is there's an energy there that we don't really get anywhere else. And you can really appreciate that. It brings so much to your life as well. You know, whether it's just because you want to go for a walk there or whether it's because you want to go and meditate. And in the folklore as well, I think, it's really encouraging to see that people are sharing stories again. And perhaps that's why podcasts are so popular again as well. You know, we miss the being huddled around the campfire sharing stories. There's nothing better,
in
my mind anyway, to just hear people's stories and you learn a lot about culture, as you say, and it gets to sort of widen your perspective a bit. I think it's good for the soul. And all of this is great without being sort of told, for instance, from an organized religion, this is what you should believe and this is what you shouldn't believe, that we are sort of exploring that for ourselves and seeing what's true for us. Yeah, that's a good way to be headed, I think.
Definitely. Well, I think one thing I'd like to touch on before I let you go, Joe, because I've kept you long enough and it's been fabulous to have a proper conversation with you about a variety of things. It's your show is one of the few that I listen to that has a warning. about the potential content. I think as people may view this subject from the outside, they think it's all very nice and fluffy and everybody has wonderful encounters, Joe. So in the body of work that you've done so far, either on the show or with people that you've spoken to over the last few years, have you ever come across an encounter that's really made your skin crawl or given you goosebumps that you think for you is one of the scariest experiences that you've been lucky to have? Well, you might not think you've been lucky to have it shared with you, Joe, but depending on how it made you feel. But clearly, is there anything that really stands out as something that made you feel deeply uncomfortable in this subject?
There are three, on three occasions when I've been, perhaps more, but I can definitely remember three occasions where I've spoken to somebody and it's been very disturbing. Two of them I wouldn't be able to talk about because they don't appear on podcasts, actually. One of them was recorded, but it was so awful that I'm not sure whether it will be released. It wasn't horrific. It was just very, very creepy and scary. And the other one was one that happened to a woman when she was a child, and it was really horrible, involving a very nasty goblin, very much like the goblin. You know, the episode you just referred to, The Good, the Bad, and the Tickly?
Yes.
The horrible one that's sitting on the curtain rail looking down at her and being, you know, he had long fingernails and nasty face and sharp teeth and sounded very much like him. And I was, you know, speaking with a woman about her experience. It was very, very hard for her to talk about it. And that's not one that would appear on the podcast. Some of my research is purely for my book, which I'm working on currently. So there'll be some sort of extra ones in there that you wouldn't find in the podcast. But the one that really stayed with me for a good while was the Twilight Zone episode.
Yes, was that episode 7, I think.
Oh God, you might even know me, but that's. Yeah, it could well be. It could. I think it is 7. Yeah, I think it is 7. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I like to do my research, Jo.
Thank you. That's so kind of you, Paul. So, I mean, I absolutely loved talking to this guest. She is such a fabulous person, and we had a right good crack chatting about her experiences. And she's one of these people that, and I'm sure you have guessed in the same way that you'll say the same thing, that they just have these experiences quite frequently. They're just one of these people that they seem to attract all kinds of mysterious incidences. And yeah, look, there were a few in there that were super creepy, and especially the one, well, there were four different incidences in that story. One of them involved children in a forest. Well, they weren't children. There's one where she gets, I won't kind of give it away, but she kind of gets discombobulated and disorientated and cannot find her way out of it. And there's another one where these apparitions appear out of the mist as she is in a certain situation. So again, I don't want to sort of reveal it, but go and have a listen if you haven't heard it before. But yeah, that really stayed with me. And this is where I, with the project, it's very important to me to not reveal place where the event happen. And that is because I don't want people trying to go, you know, hunting for the wrong reasons and harming these environments or these beings that reside there. Because ultimately, if these places got a huge footfall all of a sudden, and people with not, say, the best of intentions going there and causing trouble, then that's really a poor show on my part, I think, because if the person has shared these very personal experiences, there are three aspects to that in my view. There is the person themselves who has experienced it.
Yeah.
And it's like there's three entities. So that's one entity. The second is the being that they're talking about. So if they're talking about an experience somewhere and it involves an otherworldly being, then that being deserves to have respect as well.
Yes.
And also the place itself. So I consider the place itself, you know, an entity in itself.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got to respect these places too. And so that is why I don't reveal where these things happen. But after I had heard that, it just really did stay with me. And it was almost like sometimes when you're hearing these stories, you open up to them on such a level. And if it's quite a harrowing tale or something that is very spooky, it's almost like you are connecting with it on some level.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely didn't feel very good for about a week afterwards. I was really, really creeped out, and I knew that it was a hangover of having that conversation. Even though, you know, I've spoken to that guest since a couple of times, and I really like to stay in contact with her because she's brilliant. It wasn't about her at all. It was about what we touched on and these sort of what seemed like quite malevolent entities. There was something about it that was much more pokey than most stories I'm told. So I think that one. Also, the one about the guardian of the mountain, that was really creepy as well. And again, it was very hard for the guest to talk to me about that. That took a long time for him to talk about that. That was hard because it was very shocking for him. So yeah, that's why I do make clear that these stories are not for children. We tend to think, oh, fairy stories, lovely. I'll, you know, get my jobs. And
yes,
it's, and you know, even for some people that might just be spooked out, I would advise not to see them, especially before you go to bed anyway.
It is surprising. I mean, even somebody that listens to as many podcasts as I do, I remember listening to an episode of a American show that I love called Into the Fray with a lady called Shannon LeGros. And she did an episode, I don't know, 18 months ago, Joe. And I'm obsessed with Bigfoot in North America. I find it fascinating when I can hear people, probably because I'm very jealous because I've not made it to Oregon or Washington State yet. And the one thing that really stuck with me about this was this couple were living in the wilds of Washington State. I'd never grasped the concept of these people who live out in these places. They don't have curtains because why would you? There's nobody there. You live on your own on a big plot of land. And so they were seeing eyes walking past their front window all the time. And I just found that really creepy for some reason. Amongst a lot of other things. I mean, they recorded loads of calls and screams and all sorts. It was quite a spooky episode.
Oh, gosh.
But it was the fact that I'd never grasped this concept of these people who live in these areas of North America. I think maybe it's because we're British, Joe. You just presume you've got curtains in every room. Whereas if you live in the middle of nowhere, then you're not going to have them. It made sense when I realised it. But until then, I thought, well, why don't they just shut the curtains?
And then, yeah.
Well, they don't have any. Oh, no thanks.
Oh, I've got to say, I'd want my curtains even more. Definitely want my curtains.
I'm going to send her some.
Oh, my goodness. A big lock on the window.
Yeah.
And CCTV outside that can pick up all sorts of mannerisms.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy things that were going on there, all kinds of weird stuff. It was brilliant.
Absolutely. But I think, do you know what? We are so, I guess, we're so sensitive to this kind of thing. We're so sensitive to themes of death, aren't we? And we are so sensitive to anything that pushes our buttons in a creepy sense. But, do you know, it's just part of this world. It's part of the universe. It's part of life. And we've all been really spooked in the dark. But if we can move beyond that, we can actually gain quite a lot from that. I mean, you know, we come in to our homes and we don't even really go into our gardens at nighttime unless all the lights are on and we're in company. We might sort of have people around for barbecue or something. But how many of us go into our gardens late at night and just sit there? You know, it's a very different place. Yeah. Never mind kind of walking through a park at night, which we might want to avoid for reasons for being frightened of what people can do rather than anything else, of course.
Absolutely.
You know, but, you know, even in the safety of our own gardens at nighttime, we can get totally spooked. So I actually make myself do that sometimes. I will, even if I feel spooked, I'm going to go in the garden and just meditate for a bit. Mm. And it does feel like walking into someone else's territory at nighttime because something else takes over. Mm. You know, when night falls and the energies kind of drop, it is a very different world, isn't it? So I think maybe we've just got to get a bit more used to that. Our ancestors certainly did. And I'm sure they could tell a good tale.
Yeah, very true, very true. Well, Joe, as I said, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you about a variety of things and your work and some of the amazing witnesses you've spoken with. Where can everybody follow your work, download your podcast, and keep up to date with everything else you've got going on?
Thank you. Well, the podcast, the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, it's on and Apple and Spotify and Google and all the places where you listen to your app. The website I have is scarletofthefae.com and there's all the show notes on there. I run a Patreon group where I release bonus episodes every fortnight. So I release an episode every fortnight and then a bonus one for the patrons too. And we have a private Facebook group and a Zoom every month and various things going on, sort of exclusive workshops and things like that. So that's on Modern Fairy Sightings podcast on Patreon. And then I'm also on Twitter @_remain_curious. And I'm on Instagram @_remain_curious. And people can contact me through my Scarlet of the Fae website. So if you just, there's a contact form on there. If you just want to contact just for any reason, really, I always just love to hear from people. I'm sure there's something that I always forget and I cannot think what that would be. But generally, yeah, you can get hold of me somehow. I'm very much around. If you go through the podcast links that you find on your app, then you'll find a link there to the website.
Lovely. Well, I'll put everything into the show notes as always to help people find you and download some of those episodes. And if they need to send you a sighting or any personal thoughts that they can do through there. And I would just like to say thank you so much for your time, Joe. It's been fascinating to finally speak with you. And hopefully I will get a chance to speak to you again, and I can't wait to see the book's release.
Oh, great. Thank you so much, Paul. And thank you for sharing your story with me, which is really, really lovely. And I do appreciate that. And that's, yeah, it's really nice. Thanks for having me on. It's been fabulous. Really enjoyed chatting to you.